the Sweet James Studios, still deep behind the Orange Curtain, safe from the liberal hysteria, the West Side. I know I pick on you all the time, you West Siders, but I love you deep down, I promise that. Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week, we are here and plowing through, bravely deciphering the mumbo-jumbo that you would otherwise have to digest all on your own. And no, that's why we're here, for you, providing this great public service. 1-800-222-5222. And also my email, sam@samnation.com. I check that personally. Producer Robbie does too, and so he will alert me if there is something good that I need to address. So fire away. You know, there's a Republican in the White House who's not concerned with being a compassionate conservative. I want to make this very important point. Probably the most frustrating thing for me during the Bush years, I was younger, obviously, where was I in life? When Bush was elected president, I remember that night very well. It was the end of the Clinton era. And for me, a great relief. I remember celebrating here in Orange County with the Republican party, went to the big party. I think it was at the Ritz-Carlton down in Laguna Niguel, Dana Point. And big day. Of course, we woke up the next morning and we had problems. But that night we thought Bush had won. And for me, what did it mean? It mean we finally could get down to some brass tacks, stop, you know, dancing around uncomfortable issues like the budget, the economy, military spending, that type of thing. Those were the big issues. And also hoping we had a president who could keep his pants on in the Oval Office. Well, Bush kept his pants on. He even kept his jacket on for 8 years. Decorum, you know, decency. You know, he wore his jacket every day in the Oval Office. Remember this? That was his big thing. And it was because his predecessor, you know, couldn't keep his underwear on, let alone his jacket. So that's it. We had a guy with the jacket. And as part of all that decorum and decency, Bush was completely obsessed with being a compassionate conservative. Do you remember this? And so the era of the Republican afraid of his own shadow was born. And Trump, look, is he a conservative? I don't know. And maybe it's his complete dislike or uncaring or lack of concern with labels that frees him from this, I don't know, this millstone that the Republicans have had around their necks for my entire political life, you know, lifetime. I would say I began to be interested in politics at about the age of 8 or 9. So for as long as I can remember, I'll put it that way. For as long as I have cared about politics, I've been baffled how the standard bearers for a relatively straightforward ideology, you would think, and I'm going to explain what that ideology is, at least through my eyes, in a moment. But even to me, as a 9, 10, 12-year-old kid, I understood principally how the economy worked, and I had parents who explained it to me, thank God. So for all of the mush-filled skulls out there, but that's a tongue twister, that just, you know, didn't have the same upbringing as I, or didn't realize the same things, or were taught in school about total nonsense like social studies instead of math and economics, to you, I have to explain it. So, baffling to me that the very people who got, and here's the critical thing, who were elected year over year over year, right, put in office by men and women of the country, of this country, voters, who wanted them to lead, wanted the wanted a budget, honestly, wanted a budget that looked like this. This is what the people that voted for Bush twice, this is what they wanted from him. And they never got it. All right. What have you been hearing about this budget? $1.7 trillion in cuts to entitlements. The Republicans, not the Republicans, the Republicans are, they're not going to let Trump do this. No, no, no. The Republicans are too decent of human beings to allow such an atrocity on humanity as is this budget to even get anywhere near passing. And because the narrative has now, it's exclusively, you know, I'm doing show prep and I'm Googling, you know, some things because I want to get, that's another thing. I mean, these Google searches, by the way, the first 20 hits are always, you know, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN. It's such a rigged game. But every headline, it's an inundation, death, destruction, heartless, cruel, Nazi, of course, you know, they have to throw that in. It's an obligatory thing when we're describing, you know, Trump being Trump, I guess. But at any rate, the left has gone nuts. I mean, there are these crocodile tears everywhere. People lamenting that this is the most sick and destructive thing they've ever heard. Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe, today, you know, when Trump puts out a budget that is hateful, that is as hateful and as mean-spirited as this one is, well, my God, you don't even need Nancy Pelosi. I added the my God, by the way. That was me taking host liberties. But my God, you don't need Nancy Pelosi talking about it. Meaning you don't even need the, you know, you don't even need somebody who's totally bat nuts crazy to be speaking against it. Because, you know, and he goes on to say, you know, because at least a third of the Republicans in Congress, I mean, they're not going to stand for this. That's going to be the watertight compartment that, you know, that's going to stop the floodgates of Trump sanity to sweep through Congress. Scared as hell, he said. All right, so now, this is the hysteria. What do I see? I see a balanced budget, which, thank goodness, it's about time. The balanced budget, okay, let me see if I can explain this to you. The balanced budget, that's what you and I do. That's what you and I do every month. And if we don't do it, we get this thing called credit card debt. Generally, I mean, that's what credit card debt is. It's when you didn't balance your budget and you went over. And what happens when your credit card debt gets out of control? Well, you're screwed. That's what happens. You're going to have to pay that money back. Or it gets written off and your credit gets destroyed. Or you have to file, you know, for bankruptcy. Or you got to call one of those debt consolidators and I'm sure advertise on KBC. So pick one of them. But you're going to have to do something about it. Sooner or later, you have that come to Jesus moment, don't you? Well, I have to ask you this. When are we as Americans going to have our come to Jesus moment as a country? You know, here's a great opportunity. How about right now? You cannot run on year over year deficit spending. It's just, it doesn't work. It's not a good way to run a country. It is embarrassing when I look at my parents' home country, of which I love and you know is a second home, right, to me, and I look at the Czech Republic. Little tiny Czech Republic, 10 million people, they understand this. They're terrified of deficit spending. They've got it. Their debt as a percentage of GDP is minuscule compared to ours. This is an embarrassment. We love living on credit. Now, it's funny because we do it culturally as individuals, right? We Americans tend to do this privately. And we certainly do it as a matter of public policy. And why? Why is it? Because we love to feel good about ourselves, and because the voter is not always the taxpayer. Mick Mulvaney, who is the head of the Office of Management and Budget. So he is Trump's budget guy, right? He's the guy entrusted and charged with creating the fiscal strategy for the Trump administration. Very important position. And Mulvaney, by the way, you probably know this, but he's a big Tea Party guy. He's a proud member of the Tea Party movement. And he's a founding member. He used to be in Congress. He's a congressman. And he's one of the founding members of the House Freedom Caucus. Remember those guys? You know, it was like, Custer's last stand. You know, these are the guys who are ready to shut down the government over principled objection to deficit spending. So this is a guy, I will tell you this. If you have longed for an administration that takes a more conservative view with spending. And I know a lot of you here, by the way, this is right up your alley for most of you who are kind of in the middle, right? Yeah, I hear this from a lot of my friends, especially here in Southern California. Yeah, I'm not socially conservative. I don't really care about all the social stuff and the religious people. They scare me, but I am a fiscal conservative. How many people do you know like that? I know quite a few. It's very interesting to me when these people start to lose their nerve in the face of the type of ridiculous all-out assault that is coming from the media. How can you be that heartless? Well, listen, it's easy. You can't have it all. See, at home, don't you? You want the big screen TV. You want the nice car. You want the big apartment or the nice house. Okay, but what's the reality in your personal life? You can't have it all. And at the end of the day, the person deciding on the budget, on what is spent at your house, is you, the person making the money. Well, here the problem is, for years and years, and it's just a de facto system, our tax code is written in such a way. And I've always thought this was the root of all problems. The tax code is written in such a way where a large segment of America doesn't pay any taxes or pays a negligible tax rate. And those are the people to whom government politicians have catered. Those are the people who are wooed, who are promised benefits, giveaways, freebies. And that's what they are. I'm sorry. They're freebies. When you take something from the government that you didn't pay for, it's a freebie. So the conversation we have to have is how much of these freebies can we continue giving out? Because I'll tell you, $1.7 trillion in entitlements, and we're talking about these cuts, for the most part, if you look outside of the 66 programs, the Hill's reporting that there are 66 programs that are completely eliminated in the Trump budget. But when you move away from those, for most of these cuts, these draconian, horrible, mean-spirited, terrible cuts, they're just a reduction in the built-in year-over-year increases. It's not even an actual mathematical cut. It's just a budget that proposes, that dares to say that next year we're not going to increase this particular program as much as we did the year before. Gasp. Now I'm going to ask you, is that a little less outrageous than you thought? Interesting, right? You didn't hear that. So these cuts, this balanced budget here, this is so fundamentally critical. And this is, I'm going to tell you, this is going to be one of those moments where if Trump folds on this like he did here in the interim budget, a couple of months ago. If Trump folds on this, he's going to face big problems in 4 years. Big, big problems in 2020. But if he succeeds at pushing some of this stuff through, he has a chance of, I mean, he has a chance of making his presidency not just huge, but truly epic. And I want to get into this 3% growth business because everybody is attacking 3% growth because there's lower taxes, 3% growth. I want to explain to you something about lowering taxes. We got to talk about this from a business owner's perspective. You've got to hear this. I'm going to get into that right when we come back.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rejofsky back by popular demand. You know, when I was telling you about this hysterical reaction to the budget, I think there's a great example of it. And it all has to do with Big Bird. You remember when Trump released his first budget proposal a couple months ago? And in it, of course, there were cuts to public broadcasting. Well, the feathered face of public broadcasting, of course, is none other than Big Bird. I don't know if there's another name for him, if he has a legal name, I don't know, but we know him as Big Bird. And Big Bird, you know, there was all of a sudden a flood of funny memes. I thought they were funny. Of Big Bird standing on street corners, holding some sort of an unemployment sign or a beggar's billboard, if you will, something like that. You saw it. And the implication of it all, in many cases not even an implication, the outright statement, argument put forward by these nut jobs was that Trump was going to put Big Bird out of business. Now, these libs that were peddling this nonsense, of course, I'm going to speak to you for a minute if you're listening. If you thought that was real, you're either a dummy, okay, or you're misinformed. So there was a testimony today from Mick Mulvaney, the budget director, Trump's budget director, talking about the budget proposal for 2018. And there's this great exchange with Representative Ro Khanna, who is a Democrat from California. And he's asking, it actually steers directly into this PBS issue, Big Bird, right? So here's what Khanna says, and listen to Mulvaney's response.
He said a few moments ago that we shouldn't worry about Sesame Street and the rest of the PBS programs because Big Bird is making more money than any of us in this room. Well, I guess the good news is if Big Bird really is a billionaire, he's standing to get a huge tax cut from the Trump budget that does more to help billionaires and less to do working people and middle class people that happen to populate my district.
Snark.
Big Bird actually does get a fairly large tax cut. And we want him to,
yeah.
Because Henson & Associates, that owns Big Bird, has been paying the highest corporate tax rate in the world for the last several years. And we want them to have more money to reinvest in that type of creativity that created Big Bird in the first place, because we believe that Henson & Associates is a lot more creative than we are. And we believe that money will be much better invested by a private corporation, by private individuals, than it would be by the government.
Yes, 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 yes. I have to correct him on something, though. The company that owns Big Bird, I know this will come as a shock to you. There's actually some sort of an enterprise behind Big Bird. It's not just this lovely animal that is there to entertain and delight you and your kids. The company behind Big Bird, Sesame Workshop, it's a nonprofit company. Nonprofit, right? So it's tax exempt. But listen to this. Do you want to guess how much money they brought in last year? They had $121 million in revenue. So Mulvaney is right. Big Bird is rolling in the dough. And actually, because actually Big Bird is getting exploited. I'm going to be honest with you. Big Bird is getting the short end of the stick. The real money makers in this, the people behind it. But for example, a CEO. This is a guy named Melvin Ming. And we only have numbers back to 2014 because they report this every few years. In 2014, he made $586,000. That was just a salary. $586,000. 2013, he made more than that, $672,000. Just to give you some perspective on this, for a nonprofit, it's crazy. It's five times the average for a nonprofit CEO. The head writer made $2.2 million plus over 3 years from 2012 to 2014. There's an Investor Daily, Investor's Business Daily article that details this from I think March, sometime in March. And my only point in all of this is, why are we paying them? Where are they getting our taxpayer money? It's a great program. People obviously like to watch it. They're willing to pay for it. They're making money. This is nuts. All right, but I do want to get into tax rates. It's really important when we come back. Up next, John Wolf with the news.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
And we are back. Sam Rejofsky here on Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC, 800-222-5222. Sam at samnation.com is my email. And we are, this budget, I love it. I just want to say that. I love it. And at the core of it, at the heart of it, is a call for tax cuts. Now, of course, the Democrats are up in arms about this. This is a budget for billionaires. And you heard the clip here last segment. A Democrat from California is chastising Trump's budget director, saying that, these tax cuts are going to make billionaires richer. All right. I'm going to roll up my sleeves. Now, if you are a business owner, listen up and call all your employees and tell them to tune in right now. And if you are employed somewhere, listen up. I'm going to give you my perspective as a business owner. Now, I love what I do. My motivation when I get up in the morning and go to work, I'm not talking about the radio show. I got a day job. So when I do that and I show up, it's because I love what I do. But a part of it is, I'm going to make a huge confession to y'all right now. I do it for the money. Okay? There it is. I let that cat out of the bag. I work hard because I want to do better year over year, right? It's my objective. I hate to put it in those terms. Now, there are some people that really don't have the same heart and don't enjoy what they do as much as I do, and they do it exclusively for the money. And that's okay. Guess what? It ain't a crime yet. As Bernie Sanders had won, maybe it would be. But listen to this. There is a motivation. The business owner is motivated to grow his business. There is that element of desire. It's a huge driving force to make more and more money. That is human instinct. So, your boss, right? The guy you work for, that a-hole that, you know, drives the fancy cars and you're slaving away for him. He's got this desire, okay, to make more money year over year. And this is what happens when he gets a tax cut. You've got to believe me on this. Yes, he might buy another car. Or he might go on an extra vacation. Or he might take some of that money and spend it, which, by the way, is all good and fine and dandy for the economy. But the other thing that he does is he takes that money that he now has, say, that he's saving, and he goes, okay, Now I can hire two more people. I can buy more advertising. I can add, I can do something with my business. I can buy another machine that does more of what we do, whatever it is. Whatever capital or human infrastructure that could, would need be expanded, that's where some of that saved money will go. Why? Because the person that starts a business to begin with doesn't think like your average worker, you know, paycheck to paycheck numbskull. That person, right, thinks how? How do they think? They think long-term strategically. That person started the business and quit a day job, took a risk, and basically decided to forego pay probably for a period of time so that they could make more money down the road. And that same mentality kicks in when extra cash comes around, especially in the form of tax cuts. You must believe me when I tell you that when there are tax cuts, the business owner reinvests. Now, maybe not 100% of the time, okay? You get older people and they go, oh, good, I'm going to save this money or I'm going to spend it, whatever. But most business owners reinvest it. And when they talk about these growth numbers, I'm going to continue this when I get back. We're out of time again. But when you look at these growth numbers, this is not fictional. It's not fictional. More on this when we're back right after this.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski back behind the Sam Nation microphone. Hey, Grover Norquist, you know, he's the political anti-tax advocate. You've heard his name. You know what he called this Trump budget? Called it, this is a Reaganite, limited government, anti-waste, and anti-duplication budget. Yeah, you can't get a stronger endorsement by somebody who is more respected as an anti-tax campaigner than those words from Grover Norquist. Now, right before the break, I was explaining to you from a business owner's perspective what happens when we greedy capitalistic, you know, whatsies, when we end up with a little bit of extra folding money. And I was explaining to you that the argument that you cut taxes and the business, just the business owners, the stock, you know, holders, whomever, just end up with extra folding money that they spend isn't necessarily true. And the reason for that is the same type of person that sets out to and takes risks and ambitiously builds a business, let's say from scratch, like I have, right? Somebody who goes in there and says, all right, maybe I'm not going to get paid for a couple years. I'm going to have to survive on ramen. And then what happens? Their business slowly takes off. That person's still willing to take risks later. Trust me. They want to take their business from a $10 million a year business to a $20 million a year business. They're going to do that. But you need some flex. And one of the ways a government can truly help business is by reducing their tax burden. Now, we have one of the highest corporate tax burdens in the world, 35%. Trump wants to drop it to 15. It's not a small amount of money. And the left is screaming about how that's going to create, I don't know, like a $2 trillion deficit over 10 years, about $250 to $300 billion a year. And by the way, think about just, you know, all those big companies like Apple, Amazon and others that have entities abroad, places like Ireland and Great Britain. Why? Because they have much lower corporate tax rates. What they do is they run profits, run revenues through those companies and only put money into the U.S. as needed. Now, you might call that, oh, that's the tax avoidance and da da da. OK, fine. What you call it? The tax avoidance exists because the tax system here is broken. I'm sick and tired of hearing from the left, it's tax avoidance and conspiracy to divide. Okay, it's within the law. Okay? It's legal. And it happens because companies, big companies, are sophisticated enough to figure out workarounds. Now, the people who can't do that are, you know, smaller business owners, people like me who are forced to be in the state or states where they operate. All right. But think about if you lower the tax burden to 15% and it becomes by within a percentage point of what it is in the tax shelter country, you're going to see Apple, you're going to see these big Microsoft, big companies start to repatriate hordes of cash. Hordes. They'd rather have the money here. This is where they need to use the money. They don't need to have it parked in Ireland. They need it here. And our government should be smart enough, right, to understand this and to create incentives to bring that money back home. And so I don't, you know, when we are talking about compassionate conservatives, you know, Bush, right? Too busy being a compassionate conservative. I don't care if Trump isn't compassionate at all. He understands the math. He's been a business owner. He is still. But he's got the mindset. That's what I care about. I care about the mindset. And in order to get to this 3% growth, which is totally doable, it's not a ridiculous assumption, to get there, we have to let businesses prosper. They're the ones that create jobs. If you work for that mean boss that you don't like, think is a greedy, you know what? Remember this. You have your job because of him, okay? And because of the risks that he took. And by the way, Obama's budgets, they all assumed 6% growth. So kiss my you know what. All right, back right after this.
Say, what is this? You know what it is.
790-790-790-790-KABC.
All right, Sam Rejofsky here. So imagine you get into a car accident and you're not hurt. At least you think you're not hurt, right? You get out of the car, your adrenaline's racing, and maybe even the next day, you still are not feeling any pain. Insurance company calls you up. They say, hey, I heard you got into an accident, or you call them. And the first things they ask you are you hurt? The reason they're asking you that is not because they care, but because they want to get you on a recording admitting that you aren't injured. And they will use that against you for months and years to come if they choose to fight you later on. Because it's very common and very normal for people who get hurt in a car accident to not feel the effects of that injury right away. And no one knows this better than attorney Sweet James Bergner, because he's had to work with a lot of folks who have gotten into this predicament. They give a recorded statement. They talk to the insurance company. He still gets the money, so he can help you if that happened. But if you haven't made the call yet, don't call the insurance company at all. Instead, call Sweet James. His phone number, it's so easy. It's so easy that even I remember it from time to time. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Nation back here talking about the budget today. It's such a basic fundamental thing. You got to balance the budget. And you cannot spend money endlessly on freebies. Do you hear part of the uproar was the proposal, the budget, Trump's budget proposed that people who get food stamps, if they're able-bodied, that they should be required to work? You know what the Democratic response was to that, right? They said, most recipients of food stamps already have at least one person in the household working. Yo, hold up, I think is the term of art. Yo, hold up. I don't think I'm tracking you on this. Are you telling me that we shouldn't make this requirement because basically most people anyway do that? Or are you actually trying to tell me that we shouldn't require people who receive a benefit and are able-bodied from working? You know, this really actually mystifies me. I understand. I'm a callous-hearted right-winger. I get it. Okay? I'm not your average compassionate conservative. But I don't think that there is anything less compassionate than creating an entire society of people that are dependent on the government for their sustenance. Dependency is one of the most demeaning things that one man can put on another. I know this. I always bring a lot of these things back to parenting, and I see a lot of people and a lot of good examples of parenting and bad examples. Don't you know the parents that give their kids everything? You know those parents? They gave their kids whatever they wanted, didn't put any requirements on them for work or for chores or anything like that. Those kids, are they happy? Are they happy? Are they successful? The answer almost always is no, they're not. They're losers, even if they don't join ISIS. And I only say all this is because we need to rethink our entitlement programs. It has to stop being about what we feel, what makes us feel good, the help that we're giving others, and needs to be about the reality about creating self-sufficient Americans. That is who we are. And that is who we need to become. All right, back here again tomorrow night at 7. See you then. Can't stop addicted to the shindig. Chop, chop, it says I'm gonna win big. Talk radio. 790. KABC.